Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Up the Poshcast. It's the international break, and so we have an extra special episode today. My name is Charlie, and I'm joined by usual hosts, Ashley and Lods, and we have a very special guest, Ian Crawford, minority owner of Peterborough United, who will be talking a bit about his position on the board of directors, the Posh women's team, and more. I'll first start off with asking you, how are you, Ian?
I'm good, Charlie. Thank you. Very good, obviously. A bit of a disappointing result for the women's team this afternoon, but we can't win all the local derbies, eh?
Yeah, so obviously you're not as vocal on social media as Dara, for example. So for the Posh fans watching this that don't necessarily know a huge amount about you, tell me about your role at the club and what your sort of day-to-day involvement is.
So, first of all, I don't think there's anybody can be as vocal as him. I mean, he outdoes Elon Musk and Donald Trump most of the time. So my role at the club is quite straightforward. I got involved with Posh. I've been a Posh fan for many years, as you can probably tell by the dulcet tones. I'm not a local. So I moved down here in 2004, something. I've been here about 20 years now. And started following Peterborough immediately just because they were my local team and I've been a football fan for years and it just kind of grew. And in the dire years, as it were, the football's always been good to watch. So, and just through business, I got to know Dara and we became really good friends. We have quite a lot of business interests together now. And he was making some changes within the football club about 12, 18 months ago and asked me if I'd be interested in getting involved. It was kind of a no-brainer. I mean, it wasn't a cheap deal, but it was a no-brainer for me as a Posh fan and to get the opportunity to be a little bit more involved. It was always something I wanted to do. My involvement with the club, really, I suppose it's considerably less than Dara's, let's put it that way, because he obviously has a very intrinsic part to play within the football club. But as Dara said on many occasions, and as I've reiterated from time to time, we have a fabulous management team within the football club. And I'm not just talking about Darren and Scarfy and the lads in the football side of it. I'm talking in the non-football side of it. So finance, CEO, marketing, sales, commercial, ticketing, etc. We have a, I would say, one of, if not the best in class for our league across nearly all the positions. So it's not like some of the other businesses that I'm involved in or that Dara's involved in where I have to be involved on a day-to-day basis. That's not the case. My involvement is that if there's ever a discussion to be had or there's any some advice needed, I'm always there. I have a couple of projects within the football club that are my responsibility that I'm looking after. Posh Women, obviously, is one of them because there's never been a director of the football club had any real input or involvement. And whilst, again, my involvement's not day-to-day, because obviously Sam's the GM and he looks after that, it's nice, I feel, for the women's team to have a director who has some form of responsibility for them because, as I say, they've never had it. And it's a part of the game, it's a part of football in general that's growing. So I think it needs some attention, it needs some support. So that's part of my role. And then other things that I'm involved with is to do with the training ground and projects surrounding that and other bits and pieces that we're working on. Some I can speak about, some I can't. But day to day, I have very little involvement, to be honest. But that's simply because there's no need for me to be involved because the people that run the football club do it very, very well.
Yeah. I mean, you spoke about you've sort of been around in the director's fold for 12, 18 months. What would you say have been your best moments of your time as a director? I know it's not been a massively long time, but it's been a very good year and a half to be a Peterborough United supporter.
I'm very fortunate, Charlie, that I became a director officially. I think the paperwork and everything got signed off very early January. The transfer of the deal took place in December, but the time Companies House changes it all and everything goes through. It was early January, got signed off. And in that time, I've sat in the Royal Box at Wembley and watched my team lift a trophy. I've seen us absolutely decimate one of our local rivals 5-0 in a beautiful midweek evening. I've seen us decimate them 6-1 just a Saturday or so ago. I've seen some fantastic football. Some of the young talent that we have, both last season and some have moved on, but also again this year. And whilst they're taking a little time to settle, we've had the odd tough afternoon. Some of the talent's fantastic. So the highs for me, without question, were Wembley. That goes without saying. It would have been a high even if I wasn't a director, but to be a director and minority owner and be sat in the Royal Box and watch the boys lift that trophy and that goal from H, unquestionably is a highlight. But there have been several. The low lights, without doubt, Oxford United at home in the playoffs, because to this day, I still can't quite believe we didn't get through. We were better than them. And I will argue anybody to the end of time about that fact. We were better than them. We just didn't. We didn't take our chances. We made a couple of silly mistakes. And ultimately, it cost us. I genuinely believe had we beaten Oxford, we'd have won the playoff final and been in the championship this season.
Ian, that's a good point about the playoffs. Is obviously 2 years running now. Obviously, we've not had the best of luck, let's say.
Yeah.
Do you think, how big are the fortunes for the football club if we were to get promoted in terms of like holding on to players and extending contracts and things like that?
I mean, I don't get involved in that per se. That's Dee's job. He does it fabulously well and has done for many years. But obviously, I get to understand the ramifications of promotion or non-promotion and what it means. I can't say categorically, but if I was a betting man, I would be saying that had we got promoted last season, we wouldn't have lost. Harrison would have stayed, almost definitely. He'd have stayed as captain, signed in far, a greatly improved contract and stayed with us. It's highly likely Josh Knight would have stayed. Ronnie, I think, was always destined to leave, unfortunately. And that was an agreement, a gentleman's agreement between the chairman and Ronnie. And as he always does, the chairman stuck to it and Ronnie got his move. But the other people we've lost in the summer, I don't think we would have lost. And had we retained them with some of the talent that we've got coming through, and we would have unquestionably added to that in the summer. I'd have been very confident we've stayed up. When you look at what Oxford have done since they've got promoted, and they didn't, in my opinion, they haven't strengthened or changed the team massively. They've added some players in there that are decent, but they also lost a couple of their good players as well. So to answer the question probably far quicker than I have, we wouldn't have lost half of the players we did. We'd be in a very different team had we stayed up, or had we got up rather, and I would have been extremely confident that we'd have supplemented our place in the championship. We'd have been near the bottom. Let's not kid ourselves on about that. We wouldn't have been challenging for the playoffs and the championship or anything like that, but I think we would have avoided relegation, steadied ourselves in the championship, and then over the next 2 or 3 years started to build upon that. So, and to be honest, I went into that game, the game away at Oxford, I probably half expected us not to win that. I don't know why, I just had a feeling. The players started that game for the first 20 minutes thinking about the fact they'd turned us over a few weeks previously. But I left Oxford that night thinking, we'll turn them over 2-3-0 at home. And when Josh Knight scored, I turned to my wife, who was sat to the side of me, and I said to her, I said, that's it now, we'll win this 2-3-4. There was no doubt in my mind. And what followed, I still can't quite believe. I probably was more confident of beating Oxford than I was of getting through at Hillsborough. And that's the honest truth. I had a bad feeling about Hillsborough and I had a sneaking suspicion something was going to happen. I was fairly confident we'd beat Oxford, and confidence, unfortunately, we just fell a little bit short.
Yeah, I guess that came from just how dominant that team was last season. And a big cog of that dominant team in the first half of last season was Peter Keogh. So obviously, it would be remiss of me to assume that you'll be able to give us all the inside details of the negotiations. But it was always a question of would he come back in the summer if we'd been promoted? Do you think that would have been a possibility?
I think it's a possibility. Yeah, I don't think there's. I think the question would have been asked for sure. We tried in January. We tried and Kyoso, for all his worth, he became a little bit of a posh fan, the boy, and he'd have happily come back. There's no doubt about that either. But Rotherham just made life very difficult. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah. Obviously, a big positive point of recent weeks is James Dornelly getting the call up to the England squad. I saw something that you posted on Twitter after the Cambridgeshire derby that there was a bit of a scuffle in the halfway at halftime in the tunnel. I was wondering if you had the inside track of that, purely because we absolutely love it when we hear about our players sticking up for each other and having a little bit of a scrap. So I was wondering if you could let us know what happened there.
When the halftime whistle went, I think the ball had been played in. From memory, the ball had been played in, and I think JD was running towards the ball, and the whistle went when the ball was in the air, and there was a little bit of a coming together. It wasn't as if they'd ploughed into each other. I think JD just caught him as he ran past him, really. Morrison obviously had a bit of a torrid first half, the poor lad, hadn't he? And I don't think too kindly to it. And as they were going down the tunnel, I generally don't know what kicked it off, whether JD had had a little word in his ear, as players do, or whether Morrison just was still raging about the fact his team was 4-0 down. But they went down the tunnel together, and Morrison pushed JD into the wall of the tunnel. At that point, they kind of moved forward a little bit. So, I mean, I wasn't quite hanging off the edge to look down, but from what I could see, Sparks actually was the one who came ploughing in out of nowhere to make sure that nobody was hurt. I mean, Dornelly can stand up for himself. He might be a young lad, but he's not a small kid. It was a brave move by Morrison, because whilst he's a bit of a big fella, if Manny Fernandez and Oscar Wallen got hold of him, I don't think it'd have lasted 5 minutes. But it was pleasing for me. It's not pleasing to see that. You don't want to see that at any point. And I believe that Morrison was booked for the incident. But it was pleasing to me to see the posh lads literally out of nowhere just descended in the area to make sure JD was okay, to usher him away from what was going on and to get him down the tunnel and in at halftime. So there is a togetherness in this football team that I don't know if we've had for a little while. I would say there's a togetherness now, even more so probably than the season before. Just, I think that's partly to do with the rage of a lot of them. But yeah, I don't like to see people scrapping. Well, I do probably, but it's nice to see them back each other up.
Yeah, do you know what? That's probably quite an interesting thought, is that I would probably agree with you and say that towards the start of the season, it felt like they were all getting to know each other, getting to sort of understand each other off the pitch. And obviously the guys released the Day in the Life with Bilo. Do you know anything about the phone ban that has been put in at the training ground? And I would assume that that's probably helped them bond massively. Obviously Bilicapic has said that did help. Was there any particular reason behind that?
I'd be lying if I said I knew the reasons behind it, but I think it was a very good idea. I know, because I've got my youngest children are a bit too young, but my older kids and me to a degree, I know that you can be in a social environment and be stuck on your phone. I always use the excuse I'm working. It's not always the case, but I always use that excuse. But when you've got a bunch of kids, and I don't mean this disrespectfully because they're not kids, they're adults, but when you've got a bunch of young adults together, it's very easy just to spend time on your phone and ignore the person next to you. So the fact that the ban's in place, I think it's a great idea. And there's no doubt, as Bilo mentioned, it will have played a part in the togetherness now. Having been on the pre-season trip to Spain with them, they are a good bunch. And even guys like George Nevitt had only been with us for 2-3 weeks by the time that Spain trip came around. They all mixed together very, very, very well. But I think what's happened and what is developing over the course of the season is that rather than it being a bunch of two or three that were really good mates and would stick together, and then another two or three and then another two or three, I think they've become a properly big group now, and they all have each other's backs. And I think Bilo coming back in some respects has probably just highlighted that more than anything, because he had a rough time, didn't he, for a little while last season. Nearly all of it was undeserved. But he would be the first one to put his hands up and say that he made some errors. But he took the time away. Jed came in, did well for us. But now Bilo's got the jersey back. I think is deserved. He's proven it to be the right decision. And I think that just proves that they are a close bunch, because the boys couldn't have been happier for him. And none of them were more gutted than the outfield players when he didn't get his clean sheet at Bolton and everything else. So they are a good bunch. They are a really good bunch. And when it clicks, as it did against Cambridge and as it has done in other games this season, they are the best team in the division. Unfortunately, because of their age, it just doesn't always click.
Yeah, I think we've been really unlucky as well this season with injuries. I know the management staff don't like to blame that for some dodgy form that we've had. But I think from the supporters, and I assume from sort of the director's point of view as well, when you've got players like Hector Kyprianou, Jadon Katongo, Rio Adebisi, Sissoko from Manchester City, when you've got those players missing, it is going to have a marked impact on the way that you can perform each week.
Oh, without question. And if you look at, and Dara's the stat man, so he'd have the number. I want to say he's well into the 90%. It's like something like 93.4 or something along those lines that he quotes about the lack of injuries almost we had last year. We had 93.4% availability throughout the season or something like that. And then you flip that around and look what's happened to us this year. You add on to the fact that Archie's had some time off because he's been booked so many times, and a lot of those bookings I think have been quite harsh, but you're dead right. The injuries we've had have meant that players have had to, and you know what? Lots of things happen for a reason, and losing Hector was a massive blow because he's the captain and, in my opinion, was probably the best midfielder in the league last year. Losing him was a massive blow, but Donny's come in and taken the opportunity. Ryan De Havilland's come back and probably, I think, been as good for us as he has been since he joined the club. So, yes, the injuries have hurt, but they've also given opportunity and allowed others to kind of shine through. So, listen, every club gets them, let's be fair. The beauty for us is now if we can keep free of injuries moving forward, all these players are coming back. Rio's not far away. Hector will probably be early December. The lad from City, hopefully January. So, yeah, when we get them back, if you look at what we can achieve without them, you just never know.
Yeah,
Posh have never been a second half season team that much in all the years I've watched them. Maybe this is the year.
Yeah, it definitely feels like we've got a very favourable run of fixtures coming up. And I guess that leads me on to sort of my last question about the first team as it is in terms of playing stuff here. We speak a lot on the podcast about what our ambitions for this season should be moving forward from this point. We currently sit, I think, 5 points off sixth place. Is the ambition from the club very much still geared towards getting into those playoffs again and fighting for promotion? Or has that ambition sort of been brought down since we started the season in the way that we have?
You guys know the chairman. They wouldn't be allowed to be altered just because we've had a couple of bad results and a few injuries. There's never been a doubt amongst the directors, amongst the management, amongst the players even, that we won't be right in the mix come April, May time. And I generally think that will be the case. I'm very hopeful that once we get all the players back and you look at how we can perform without them, I generally think that there's an outside chance that we could still be in the mix for an automatic, because we could go on a run. The fixtures are in our favour now and we could go on a run. Yeah, listen, Birmingham are a good side. Wickham, as much as they're not my favourite team by any stretch, I've had a fabulous start to the season. Wrexham do what Wrexham do very, very well. Stockport have done very well. There are some really good sides in our league, but if we play to the absolute best of our potential and the best of our ability, there isn't a single team, and I include Birmingham in this, that will match us. So there's no reason why we can't be right in the mix for an auto, but very, very much top six is very much the plan. And that's never deviated, not once.
Ian, the January transfer window is obviously coming up. Do you have any idea whether we're planning on strengthening the squad? Do we believe that it's strong enough to to reach automatics as it currently is? I know Ferguson said he's after one position. Is that a replacement for someone we could potentially lose, or is that literally just a strength from what we've currently got?
My understanding is that the position we're after is to strengthen, not to replace. But of course, with the way certain individuals have played this season and the press that they're getting, January sometimes can be silly season for money, because people have, I don't know, they could be sitting on the verge of playoffs in a certain league and they'll throw a load of money at it because they want to get themselves up. I mean, if you're a team that's in and around the playoffs of the championship, the money involved in getting to the promised land is ridiculous. So to fire out 5-6 million quid on a player that you feel will get you up there is nothing. Coventry kind of had a little bit of a dabble with F1 last year, but Darrow had made a promise to the gaffer that he wasn't going to take any of his team away. So the deal was done, but obviously we got F1 back. But I mean, if somebody comes in with silly money, as much as we would like to say, well, we can't sell him, and the intention is very much not to sell anyone. We want to keep everybody we've got because we want to have a go again. If somebody comes in and offers us a telephone number, then we have to consider it. But Dara's always given Darren almost the last say. As directors, we don't override that. The only time I think that would ever happen is somebody came and offered us like 15 million quid for a player, Darren would be told, look, sorry, Darren, but we have to accept it. But there have been times where Darren said, look, that's a great offer, you've got to take it. So the gaffer's brilliant that way, in actual fact. He can see the bigger picture. But as it stands, the one player or position, rather, that they want to fill is to strengthen, not to replace. And if there are any outgoings, it'll only be because somebody offers us something that we just can't turn down.
Yeah, so we'll move on from sort of the playing squad as it currently is. And you mentioned that you work on a couple of projects. The Posh Women is one that obviously we'll touch on later, because I think that's one that especially Ash has a lot of questions about. I think it's something that our viewership would be really interested in. It's not something we've covered massively on the podcast so far. But you spoke about other projects that you're working on at the minute. I was wondering, you know, you said some have to stay behind closed doors, but I was wondering if there's any that you can shed a bit of light on.
Well, the only one I can really probably tell you more about would be that we're trying to, we've commenced a project that involves increasing the land we have at the training ground and giving it a bit of an overhaul and, what would be the word? Just improving the facilities we have. We're obviously a Cat 2 Academy now, and that comes with certain requirements and criteria, all of which we meet, both in terms of personnel and facilities. But we want to improve them. We have seen the benefit in the last 2 or 3 years of the work that Jason Neal actually did when he pushed this through, much to probably at the time Dara was against it because he wanted to keep the money in the first team. But back in the time Jason really pushed it, Dara then agreed, and fair play to the pair of them, the academy has produced players for us now. Ricky, H, JD, Manny, there's others. And they've not all been with the academy since the age of 7 or 8, but they have joined the academy when they've maybe been 14, 15, 16, and the academy has improved them to the point they play for the first team. So it's a vital tool for us. And for a club like ours, with the limited resources that we have, because we're not a Birmingham that's getting 25, 30,000 every week. And before people start jumping all over me saying, oh, I'm fucking criticising the fans, that's not the case. The stadium only holds so much anyway, and the fan base we have, aside from the odd one or two who loses it from time to time, the fan base we have is fantastic, and the backing and the following that the players get, both home and away, is tremendous. But it is limited, and we are competing in a swimming pool that includes some really big people and that with really big attendances. So for a club like ours, we need the academy to be producing talent, and there will be occasions where we might have uncovered a 14-year-old, and he then gets picked up by a big boy. We lost a lad not so long ago to Newcastle. We get a fee for him, and it's not an insignificant fee, but we need a couple of them most years, because that then makes the academy worthwhile. It pays for itself, and then anything on top of that, and if they can break through like JD has now and made it into the men's elite squad, Fantastic. So the academy is a vital component of the football club, and so we just want to improve the layout of it. We want to maybe see if we can work on giving the first team its own actual training area, and so they're not necessarily mixing with all the academy, etc. So that's not going to be a quick fix. Probably won't even be the next season. It's going to take us a little while, but that's something that we're working on, and it's just another step along the road for the football club, just improving itself and improving the facilities it has. And with a cactus status, and if you can improve the facilities, it's far easier to attract the best talent.
Ian, when we think about, I'm just looking at the squad, and obviously there's been quite a lot of talk about Luka Mendonca, hasn't there?
Yeah.
How does the club go about finding somebody like that and then integrating them into the academy?
So the club has two or three people who are responsible for overseeing academy recruitment. And I happen to know a little bit about this because my son's one of them. And there's a team, I think there's about two or three, I think it's three of them now. And their responsibility is they oversee a network of scouts. Now, these scouts work for nothing more than travel expenses in most cases. And they travel all the local areas. So it tends to be Cambridgeshire, Northamptonshire, going old school here, Huntingdonshire, North Norfolk, the very north tip of London, etc. And kind of, if you take Peterborough and we to draw a circle of about a 65-70 mile radius, it includes that. So it does include places like Nottingham, Derby, etc. And not always so easy there because you're competing against some big hitters. But those scouts tirelessly every weekend, midweek when there's the opportunity, will go and watch proper low-level grassroots, starting at under-8s, under-9s, upwards. What they will do is they will then feed the information back into the guys at the academy, and then one of them, ordinarily, will then go and meet the scout and go and watch said 1, 2, 3 lads and watch them play. If they feel it's worthwhile, they'll then get invited to the academy to come and join in a couple of training sessions, and they'll be monitored by the lead phase coaches, the coaching staff of the individual age groups, and the recruitment team. They will then have a meeting. And in that meeting, it's not quite as simplistic as put your hands up if you think you want to take them, but the discussion goes round. And then I think if the majority think it's worth the go, we sign them up for the academy. And then it's down to the coaching staff to work with the talent that individual has. And sometimes it's not a quick process. Other times, and I'd be lying if I knew exactly which names, but sometimes they'll find a lad at under 10, under 11. They'll bring him in and he'll literally be on the pitch for 5 minutes and they'll have the paperwork out because they can see what he's got. The academy talent recruitment, and I'm not saying this just because my son is one of them, but the talent recruitment that we have, it really is very, very good. And almost as importantly, the coaching staff that we have at the younger age groups is also fantastic. So the academy's in incredibly good hands. From Dan at the very top, who has come in and took over from Kieran, obviously when Kieran joined Darren's backroom staff as his number two, Dan's done an absolutely fantastic job, and the academy is going places. It's growing all the time. So it's money that the club's invested, that some will argue, well, you could have invested that in the first team, but it's reaping its rewards now, because when you look at the players from the academy that are now coming into the first team, let's say there's a few quid on a right back, or say there's a few quid on a centre forward, etc. So it's a very interesting process, and as I say, having seen the way that they do it, it's also very clever. To somebody who's, I'm not a football man, I couldn't do Darren Ferguson's job, I couldn't be a coach of a football team. It's not, I think I know what good football looks like. I think I understand what the best formation is at a given time, but I'm not trained in it, I'm not qualified in it. But these guys all are, and it's very, very noticeable when you go and watch them play. And the other thing to say about the academy is that, and this comes from Darren and Dan in the academy, is that if you watch if you watch the first team play, our 21s, our 18s, our 16s, our 15s, and our 14s, and I think even down as the 13s, play exactly the same way. The formations are all, as much as possible, based on personnel, are more or less the same. and they try and indoctrinate them in the way Peterborough play. So that means that when the lads that are in the 21s get an opportunity, it's not square peg, round hole. This lad knows how we play. He knows how to play that position. So it's good to see. And I think over the next, as long as we can hold on to them, over the next 2 to 3 years, there's some real talent at 15, 16 level that when they make a breakthrough, the Posh fans are going to enjoy them.
Yeah, and Ian, myself and Lods were at the sponsors event with yourself and Dara. Obviously, one of the things that I sort of mentioned was the fact that we have like Norwich that come 2-3 nights a week and use Yaxley, and they basically train all of the local. I've got two lads in my under-14s team.
Yeah.
I asked the question and Dara gave an answer is that we're saying that we go 65 miles away to try and find people. Do we, as Peterborough United, with people knowing what success we have with young players, is that a natural pull for people?
Yeah, it is. And you know that you'll find that there will be some parents, and genuinely it's the parents, that when a lad's 11, 12, 13 years old, yes, they have an opinion. Yes, they know they don't want to go to Peterborough. They're only League One. I want to go and play for Norwich, at least in the Championship, whatever. But generally, these things are driven by the parents. And most parents get it. They understand that for their child to get the best opportunity, you don't necessarily want to stick them straight into the academy at Norwich or Man City or at Notts Forest or Derby County, because whilst they're bigger clubs, it's harder to get the breakthrough. There's been more than one occasion in the last 12, 18 months, that certainly that I'm aware of, where a player's had an option of Posh, Forest, Leicester, and he's picked Peterborough simply because he can see the pathway. And that's something that Dan Robinson's been incredibly keen on really forging and building is the pathway. And it's very noticeable. You can see it. And so these guys can see the opportunities will exist for them. You look at the 16s now. Had the results in the EFL Trophy gone slightly differently in the games that didn't involve us, and we were already guaranteed, whilst we were almost guaranteed it, we wanted to make sure we topped the group and got a home draw. But had that already been signed and sealed, you might have got to see some of the 16-year-olds play in that game. But because we kind of needed the result, we didn't want to risk it. But had they played, you'd have seen some of the talent that exists. Places like Forest, and I keep using them because they're local, but Forest and Leicester and the guys like that, they just can't offer us a 15, 16-year-old that opportunity, whereas we can, and we have done it, and that's a draw for a lot of people. Yes, well, you touched on it, Ashley. You've got some lads who go training with Norwich. There will be people that play in my back garden that have slipped through the net. But the pool of Posh is probably as good as it's ever been.
I can echo that. As somebody who is frequently around the academy as a sort of grassroots referee, so I get to see some of the players get to see the next.
Oh, Harris you're tomorrow. The one you talk about. They do say there's that tosser Charlie.
I get to see a lot of the players. I can see the next Harrison Burrows, the next Ricky J. Jones. I can see these players coming through. I can see that they do play the exact same way. And it's really impressive. Moving on to the other sort of big project you mentioned, the training ground was one of them. The other one is the Posh Women. Yeah. And I guess I'll start off with quite a generic question. What are the ambitions from within the club for the Posh Women in the sort of short term, the next 2 or 3 years, and then in the longer term?
There's no question that the immediate ambition, and then today's result hurts that, doesn't make it impossible, but hurts it. The immediate ambition is to get promoted. They're currently in what would be the equivalent of League Two, although it's regionalised at that level, but they're the equivalent of what would be League Two. So they're three leagues away from the WSL. But promotion has to be the immediate aim for the women's team, and they have the abilities and the players to do so. They are a pretty talented bunch, especially at this level, and just the odd result hasn't quite gone our way, and it's going to make life difficult. But it's like any department of the football club, really, and it includes the men's team. When you run a football club, you're always going to have to accept again, particularly in the men's team, you're going to have to accept that every year there's a deficit. And I knew that before I bought into it. Dara's very well aware of it. We have a financial hole every year, which has to be filled. It's just fact. There's no hiding away from it. And we fill it every year. No problem. It is what it is. Ideally, the women's team, we want it to be at a break-even point. We want it to be profitable, if at all possible. It's because at the level it's at, if it's costing the football club money, then it would never not be here. But questions get asked. So it was one of the reasons the job was given to me, or I was asked to have a look at it and be involved in it, is the fact that we didn't want it to lose money. We needed to make it commercially more viable, more attractive. And there's lots of things that we are trying to do that. So I guess to answer your question, Charlie, the two immediate things are get promoted out of the league they're in, and at the very worst case scenario, make it break even.
Yeah, and I've seen sort of a few comments online from supporters of other clubs within the league. I'm sure we're not the sort of FA Women's National League equivalent of Manchester City, but it is no secret that we have been making some very big moves in terms of transfers this season. You know, when you look at the league table, we're around Loughborough Lightning. We've just taken their captain and one of their better players off of them. Is that sort of the aim to try and become one of those powerhouse teams in sort of the lower leagues of women's football?
We're not setting out to do that in any way, shape or form. And finances dictate. And the honest truth is that some of the signings that have been made were a calculated risk in some respects, because financially, the numbers that Sam had pulled together for this year, and Sam's the GM of the women's team, that we pulled together for this year that we needed to achieve. We always base, as we do with the men's team, we don't really include cup runs. So a cup run's a massive bonus. We saw the draw came out for the Women's FA Cup, and we got a home tie against a team from the league above. But we knew the prize money for getting through, what that would be. So we took a calculated risk. I'd have probably got my ass kicked by the chairman had we lost that penalty shootout, because it would have taken us from a little profitable to not. But that's how we've managed to do that. So I have read a few things about Posh becoming the next bloody Man City of women's football. That's nonsense. I mean, these ladies have made the move to us because they see the ambition within the football club. That's the first thing. And because, particularly in the case of Hayley, who came from Notts Forest, was that she wanted game time. She was part of the Forest squad in the 16-17, but wasn't a regular starter for them. And Forest, as I said, I think I touched on with you guys when we were speaking before we started, are a little bit of an anomaly. They're only one league above Peterborough, but they're romping that league. They'll be back into the ladies' championship next season. They've got an annual budget for the women's team of well over £1 million. The women are all full-time. That just doesn't happen. You only really become full-time in women's football when you reach the championship. But Hayley wasn't getting a regular game there. Sam and I don't know if it was George or Jake, but one of the management team met with her and kind of sold her on Peterborough, and she was more than happy to join. And you'd have seen today, because I think you were all there, that you can see that she's played at a higher level. We brought her in as a centre half. She played most of today at right wing, but still, she had their fullback most of the game. The final ball wasn't always just what she wanted, but she's definitely a different level. And Kayleigh, who came on, unfortunately, excuse me, logistics meant that she missed the kickoff because she got stuck in a horrendous traffic jam. But when she comes on and when she gets fully integrated, she'll make a big difference. So, yes, we are strengthening. We knew we needed to strengthen. We knew that we had a team capable of competing. Did we feel we had a squad capable of winning the division? We were hopeful, but we thought we could two or three additions, and we've got two of the three we wanted. We still have a chance. Today's result doesn't help us, but we still have a chance.
Ian, the question that I want to ask, obviously, lots of ins this season, but the one big surprise was probably the out that we've had in the last sort of two, 3 weeks within the women's team in Frankie Pym, obviously leaving and going to Royston. Obviously, we saw Frankie at Newport, and she's obviously a posh fan. How frustrating was that to lose somebody that ultimately you could say was probably an academy product, similar to coming through from the men's side of the game?
Agreed. And it's always a shame when you lose somebody who's also a fan and has been with the club for, as you say, for many years and walked through the pathway. I wasn't involved in any decisions, and I never get involved in football decisions in any part of the football club. But my understanding is that Frankie wanted more game time. She couldn't necessarily get it. And so the decision was made. Me personally, it's always a shame when a player leaves, certainly one that can strengthen your squad. But I also understand that players want to play. And therefore, if we couldn't guarantee her a start every week, which we simply couldn't because of some of the changes that were being made, I understand the decision. But it was a shame. And I wish Frankie was still part of the squad because she gives us depth, which we had 6 players out today. It was noticeable. That was all I would say. Not all of them would have started, but what it meant was we were light on the bench.
Yeah, well, we attended the game today, Lords, Ash and I, and we had a great day. And the facility up at Bourne was really nice. But I think one of the main things that one of the main frustrations with some people to do with the women's team is the fact that we started in Central Peterborough and it took us, 35, 40 minutes to get to a home game. Is there any chance, is there any plans being put in place to move the women's team back into Peterborough? They have home games only once or twice a month and on a Sunday. Is there any chance that could be something where they either move into the stadium or move into a ground closer to the actual city?
Yes, is the answer. That's one of the things that I'm trying to achieve. playing at London Road is unlikely, for the simple reason that the economics of it just don't add up. The crowd or the support that the women's team get is growing, but it's not enough with the costs of opening the stadium up and the staff you would need to have in place and everything else. Financially, it just doesn't work. We went to play at PSL. We were at Pimm's Park, I think they call it now, for the cup tie. And the girls loved it. The management team loved it. Sat in the GM, loved the facilities. That's a possibility. We're still speaking to Peterborough Sports. A little bit disappointingly for me, the gate didn't change that much. There was more at Bourne today than there was at the Peterborough Sports game. And it was a cup tie and everything else. And it wasn't a test run in any way, shape or form. But I wanted to put on a game in the heart of Peterborough to allow the fans who might wake up on a Sunday morning or have their roast and think, oh, bugger it, I'm going to go to the football, and they can walk to it. As you say, to get to Bourne for a Peterborough fan, it's a central Peterborough-based Peterborough fan, is 35, 40 minutes. I wish there'd been a bigger gate for the cup tie. It would have given me a bit more impetus, probably, to get this sorted. But the deal's in place with Bourne for the rest of the year. That's fine. As you say, the facilities there do a job. But yes, ideally, I want the women's team to play in Peterborough. At the end of the day, they are Peterborough, and that's where they should play. So I'm working on it. We are trying. And hopefully, if we can get them to Peterborough, then if they start a season like they have done this year, that would generate more interest and we'd get the gates higher. And I think had we been Peterborough based from the start of the season, the gates would be higher now. But it's not been possible for lots of logistical reasons. But yes, I am trying, and that is the aim. Unfortunately, London Road, unless the girls manage to pull off a plum cup tie at some point in the future and we draw a big side where it's worthwhile, playing at London Road for now just isn't financially or economically viable.
Ian, I've got probably a double-headed question on that. Obviously, like we said, the facilities at Bourne, they do the job. Obviously, you're talking about the comparison in the attendances for Pimm's Park and then Abbey Lawn. Do you think that that is a basis of the fact that actually the women's team supporting base is probably Bourne based and out that way?
Yes, I think that plays a part in it. Actually, to be honest, I think the women have built themselves a nice little supporters base in Bourne now, because this is our second season there. And despite today's result, the women win far, far more games than they lose, and they generally score a lot of goals as well. So I think they have built a following. And there's another little core group of supporters that are involved from Urban Penguin, the main sponsor, and friends and family of both the sponsor and the players. But today, had we been at Pimm's Park, I think we'd have had more, because guys like you, I know you did it partly because you were going to do the podcast this evening, but you made the effort to come along because there's been no posh game this weekend, either home or away, because of the international break. And off the back of the 6-1 last week, that's pretty disappointing. But I feel that had we been in Peterborough today, we might have got a few more through the door of the regular men's team followers who might have just come along just for a little bit of a posh fix. The distance to Bourne stopped that. So the core fan base that the women's team has currently is definitely Bourne-based. There's no doubt about that.
So the next question, and I don't want this to come across as a dig, is that the London Road thing, and obviously I don't know the finances, the London Road thing and the women not playing at London Road confuses me, and hopefully you can answer. But because we occasionally open up on a Tuesday afternoon or a Monday afternoon or a Wednesday and let the under-18s, the 21s or the 23s play their games. Season ticket holders obviously get in for free, don't they? Yeah. What sort of level does the fan base need to be at for it to be cost effective? Because obviously, I would say that for those games, they are run at a loss, I guess. And they're there. Is that what's the difference in terms of playing it? Because like Dell, who's on the pod, will come up to Peterborough and watch at Peterborough, but he lives in St Neots, and that would basically mean like an hour and a half for him to get up to Bourne.
Yeah.
Which completely rules it out. But if it was at London Road, so it's just finding that right balance, is that it confuses me that we do these basically training games, let's say, for the 18s and the 21s, but then we're not ready to make that commitment for the women, if that makes sense.
I think the 18s and 21s, the reason they get played there, generally they're either cup ties or derbies in the main. There's the odd exception. So it's felt that they warrant played at London Road. Now, your first argument to me would be, well, today was a derby. Yeah, I get that. But they're also generally played midweek, so the stadium's already open and what have you anyway. We ran the numbers, and I'd be lying if, at the top of my head, I could tell you exactly what the required attendance was. But based on the average, which sits at about between 200 and 220. Today was above average, which is great. Good day. One of the better attendances we've had this season. I think it would need to be double or triple that to make London Road worthwhile opening. Yes, we'd only open the main stand. And they have had one, maybe two games there previously. And the supports, I think we had four-figure supports a couple of times. But I would love for the posh women to play at London Road. But the other thing that needs to be taken into account here, and it's not finance, is the pitch. And we want the pitch to be the best it can be for the entire season. And last year, of course, we had pitch issues. This year, touch wood, it seems to be holding up okay and it's doing all right. And the pitch looks in pretty good nick. And we spent a bit of money on it in the summer, and that seems to have done the trick for now anyway. So that's the other reason too. The groundsman probably wouldn't be very happy if we started to load more games on with the girls or the women on a Sunday and everything else. So that plays a part in it. But the main reason is finance. And if we could get to a point where we're averaging 400 or 500, gives me an argument to sit in a board meeting and say, look, we're at 400 or 500 and we haven't been at London Road. If we can get in London Road, I reckon we could add another 200 or 300 and start to get 1,000 people in the door. Then that's when I have an opportunity. For now, I know that the board would reject it if I tried to do it, because we have run the numbers. We've crunched them several times, actually. It just doesn't add up, unfortunately.
Ashley mentioned that me and him were at the sponsors event just before the season started.
Yeah.
And you asked the room if there's anyone that can sort of do what they can in terms of buying some of the sponsorship packages for the women's team.
Yeah.
Is there sort of like a message? What is it that you would want from Posh fans if they could do one thing to help support the women's team? What is it that you would be requiring from them?
Since that day, actually, to be fair, Sam and his team have managed to secure quite a lot of extra sponsorship, which has helped. It's helped. It has played a factor in us bringing in the extra players. Whilst the cup tie and the prize money has been the significant factor, the increased sponsorship has. All I would ask is that if anybody wants, and the other thing to say is, as with the men's team, actually, what you can get for in terms of value by sponsoring any of the Peterborough United sides is it's not overly expensive. Now that sounds like a really daft thing to say in today's climate when everything's kind of cost a fortune, but to sponsor the Posh Women it doesn't cost a lot of money. We're not talking thousands of pounds, but at our level and at that level, being a match sponsor for £400 or sponsoring one of the few women that don't have an away kit or a home kit sponsor, and I think there's going to be only four now left, a couple of hundred quid, that makes a massive difference. And whilst it doesn't seem like a lot of money, when you're at that level where the Posh women's team is, an extra £1,000, £2,000, £3,000 in a season makes a huge difference. And therefore, for us to get Posh women where I feel they rightfully should be, and where Peterborough United as a football club would like to see their women's team, anything that anybody wants to put in terms of a sponsorship or whatever form that may take will be welcomed with open arms. And we want to grow the women's team. The men, Alex and the lads in the commercial team, do an incredible job. And I know that on Twitter, there was a period, especially when they're announcing it over when the transfer window was open, and they make an announcement and it's, we've got another sponsor, and the entire supporter base goes into an absolute freaking meltdown because, oh, brilliant, we've got a new sponsor for the, for the men's changing room. Can he play right back? Do you know what I mean? And I get that happens from time to time. I know it winds a lot of people up, but it's testament to the job they do. If we could just get a little bit of that in the women's team and get some of what they've got, the women's team will kick on. The commercial side of it and the sponsorship and the money raised go straight into the team. And the team can only improve if we bring in more money. And if the team improves, it gets up a division. Then it gets up. And when you start to get near the top of the next league, as the men's team is near the top of League One, when you get into the Championship, you can then sniff the promised land. And the money for the football club as a whole, if the women's team progresses and can get up the leagues, it's going to help, because there will come a point if the women's team gets to where it would love to be, that will just come into a pot, and it'll be a football club pot. So who's to say the women can't help the men at some point in the future?
Yeah, I think that's, that would be an immensely proud thing for most of the Posh fans, to have a women's team that is in sort of the top two divisions in that women's championship. We don't want to dream too hard, but, if we'd ever got a big WSL run or a chance to, progress a lot in the Women's FA Cup, I'm sure it was something that would really unite the fan base behind the women's team. And so I think the progress that's being made with them is fantastic. It would be remiss of us as a podcast to not preview next week's Peterborough United game. Have to do it at the end of every episode. We've got Reading at home. Before we get on to your score prediction, Ian, I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on the game? What are your thoughts on what needs to be done now to string together a run until Christmas? Obviously, we know we might have a few players back from injury. How big an impact do you think that's going to have on the squad going through this sort of festive fixture schedule?
I think that, and you've hit the nail on the head there, Charlie, is that it's a hectic schedule over this next month and a half as we go through the festive period. So the fact we can increase our numbers in the squad will make a massive difference. Yes, some of those guys will come in and possibly take a starting 11 shirt kind of as soon as they're up to match fitness, but just the squad in general being bigger makes that run of games not easy in terms of the opposition, but easier to deal with because you're not down to the bare bones where we have been at certain points this season. In terms of Reading are a good side. They've got some real talent in their team. But as I've learned over the years, and as my best mate always tells me, it's not about the opposition, it's about what we do. And if we do what we can do, then we should come away with a positive result.
Yeah, and another big aspect of the game next week is that we have the GH display stand again open to home fans. I know it's something that in the last 18 months, really from that 5-0 Cambridge derby game, it really kicked off. It's been a big debate about the GH display stand and its availability to Peterborough United fans on a weekly basis. And obviously there's been a lot of talk about sort of the logistics of having it open. I was wondering whether you could shed any light on that situation. I think it would be unfair to say that it was anything other than rocking for the Cambridgeshire derby last weekend. I know a lot of us had That's the Way I Like It stuck in our heads for hours and days after the game. What are your thoughts on the GH? What do you feel Posh fans need to do to get that open more often? And yeah, what are your views?
The views on it are, for a long time, I couldn't understand why the fans were singing about Tesco's. But the atmosphere was fabulous. It was in the 5-0 last season, but I thought in many respects, the noise coming from the stadium this year was even better. You're right. When it's been opened and utilised properly, the GH doesn't have help create an atmosphere because the London Road End still creates a noise. But when you have it from both sides, especially where I sit, yeah, pipe down, Ashley. Especially where I sit right in the middle, when you have the noise coming from both sides, it's great. To answer your question, Charlie, what do the Posh fans need to do? The answer is very, very simple, and it's been borne out a few times now, is they need to do what they did against Cambridge. They need to sell it out. We need to fill it. As long as we can fill it, there will never be an occasion, ever, 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 where the chairman will turn around and say, well, we need to give that to the opposition. As long as we continually do what we did, then that's all you need to do. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a sentiment. It'll be interesting to see how full it gets for the Reading game. I think it's half sold to Peterborough fans. Anybody that's listening to this and is sort of considering whether to go to the game or not, considering whether or not to go in the GH display stand or to go wherever they would normally sit, I think you should definitely get behind it. We'd love to see you all in there. I'll be in there. I'm sure lots of podcast crew will be in there as well. And hopefully it'll be a really good atmosphere on Saturday. So, Ian, we'll talk about your score prediction now. We always ask our guests for score predictions. I know some people hate them, but we're going to really push you on that. If you could give a score prediction for the Reading game next Saturday and also give us your player that you think will be guaranteed to score a goal.
I hate score predictions because they normally come back and bite me on the backside because I didn't think we'd win 6-1 last Saturday, let me tell you that. Right now, I'd take 2-1. And in terms of goal scorers, I reckon that Randall will score.
Lods, what are your thoughts? Is your score prediction?
I think the squad are very harmonised at the moment, aren't they? They're playing good football. They're scoring lots of goals. I think the clean sheet is coming and I think we're going to get it. I'm going to go for 3-0 and I think Ricky will continue his form and I think he'll get a goal.
Well, I predicted 6-0 against the Cambridge game and unfortunately we conceded. So I, like Lods, think that this week is going to be the week that we keep a clean sheet. So I'm just going to go with a 5-0. We'll have Malik 2, Ricky 2, and then Amani Fernandez goal. Why not?
Yeah, I'll go for a Posh win as well. I feel like we've got momentum now. It feels like we're really into the sort of chunk of this season. I'm feeling optimistic, as I think many of us are. I'm not going to keep a clean sheet. I'm not getting that carried away yet. But I'll go for a 3-1 win. And I'll say that Oscar Wallin will get his first Peterborough United goal at the weekend. You remember that Vincent Kompany goal against Leicester where he smashes it home from the edge of the box? That's what, from actually the halfway line almost. I reckon that's what our big Swedish guy is going to do at the weekend. It will be a fantastic occasion if that happens. So thank you so much for joining us, Ian. It's been great to be able to talk to somebody from the football club and get some of our questions in. We'll be back next week after the Reading game, hopefully reminiscing on some very successful score predictions and not looking like idiots again. Thank you very much for listening to this week's episode of Up the Poshcast. And yeah, up the posh.
Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.
Yay.